Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There's a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. How much should I charge? That's a question that I hear all too often here at Entree Architect. How do you set a proper hourly billing rate as an entrepreneur architect working hard to build a profitable architecture firm? No one ever taught us how to do this, so we try to match the market, or we just flat out guess. Well, I have fantastic news for you. We've developed a brand new tool from Entree Architect. It's called the Entree Architect Hourly Billing Rate Calculator. Just read the simple questions, input the answers, and the calculator will do all the heavy lifting. The calculator will provide you with a proposed hourly billing rate, including your pay rate, a calculated amount for overhead, and your target net profit. In seconds, you'll know exactly how much you should be billing your next client. Download this valuable tool today for free at entrearchitect.com/billingratecalculator. That's entrearchitect.com/billingratecalculator. My name is Mark R. LePage, and you are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, where I speak with inspiring, passionate people who share their knowledge and expertise, all to help you build a better business as a small firm entrepreneur architect. This is episode 262, and I'm with Evelyn Lee this week to discuss leveraging your skills as an architect beyond traditional practice. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by our platform sponsors, Gusto. Gusto is refreshingly easy payroll, benefits, and HR for the modern small business. ARCAT, the online resource delivering quality building material information, CAD details, BIM, specifications, and so much more at ARCAT.com. And FreshBooks, the cloud-based accounting software that makes running your small firm easy, fast, and secure. Spend less time on accounting and more time doing the work you love. Evelyn Lee, welcome to Entree Architect Podcast.
Hi, Mark. Thanks for inviting me here. It's great to be a guest.
It's great to have you here. It's we've been talking about this for a long time. You and I have been comparing notes, and we're on social media together all the time and communicating. And we've been talking about getting together and having this conversation for a long time. So I'm glad you're here.
I'm glad we could make it happen. First quarter 2019.
Yeah, this is going to be fun. So let me introduce you. Evelyn Lee received her Bachelor of Architecture degree with honors in 2002 from Drury University, where she minored in global studies while playing on the women's soccer team. So think about that. I want to just pause for a minute and explain what that architecture degree, minored in global studies, and played women's soccer. So you architects out there, you know how hard that was. In 2003, she received her Master's of Architecture degree at SciArc. And most recently, in 2012, Evelyn finished her dual MPA, which is a Master's of Public Administration, and an MBA in Sustainable Management from Presidio Graduate School. And you may recognize her name if you're a fan of Contract Magazine. She wrote the monthly column over there about business for 3 years, more than 3 years. So you probably may know her from there, and you probably see her on social media. And Evelyn, she's received numerous industry awards, including the 2016 40 Under 40 Award from Building Design and Construction Magazine and the 2014 AIA National Young Architects Award. And she currently serves as director at large for the National Board of Directors over at the AIA. So,
yes,
pretty accomplished, pretty busy woman doing a lot of things.
Thank you for that.
So let's dive a little bit deeper. Let's okay. learn a little bit more, because that's a lot. I'd like to go back to where this all started. What inspired you to become an architect? What sort of encouraged you? And give us the story from that moment to where you find yourself today.
Oh, wow. I'll try to keep this short. I was one of those individuals, and I know there's a lot of people out there that like knew from a very young age that they wanted to be an architect. So I think it was my fourth grade teacher, we were talking about families and homes, and, you know, that she asked everyone to draw their home, essentially. And I started going at it in plan, right? When everyone else was started drawing an elevation. So I knew at that instant that I was thinking about things a little bit differently. And then I was hooked on picking up, you know, all those magazines in the supermarket with old Victorian homes where you could purchase the plans.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and build them on spec. But, And then I was hooked, and my dad was a great, mentor in making sure I get to an accredited degree program, because I probably would not have known to have gone down that path. And I did that. Drury, I would say, is a very technical school, and I was also really interested in research and design and architecture, which led me to SciArc to kind of get the dual sides of education. I've always had a side dream of wanting to teach architecture too, so I felt that I needed my master's to do that. I haven't added that to my resume yet, teaching. And then, you know, I did the whole thing. I went and I got licensed, and I got to the end of it, and I was like, you know what? I'm doing K-12 modernizations. I'm working on community buildings and community centers, and I am not engaging with the end users as much as I would like. Right. These are buildings for the communities, and I'm rarely talking to the students. I'm really rarely talking to the teachers, because they're the ones not making decisions about how their buildings are being built. And I decided my role needed to shift, and I didn't know exactly what that was. So at the time, I went to run what is now the One Plus program at Public Architecture as their first program manager. So that at the time it was, you know, before the Great Recession, architects were doing very well, like they are now. And we're asking them to give 1% of their billable hours towards the public good pro bono. But then they were having problems finding nonprofit organizations that actually wanted to work with architects. And I found the most meaningful conversations to be on that side, trying to tell those organizations the value that design brings to the table, even if they don't have a new building in mind, you know, and what we can do to, from even a design perspective, to help increase their funding. From there, I very quickly realized that I didn't speak their language. I think we learn a very specific architect. I mean, we have our own dictionary, right, as architects, and our own vocabulary. And I felt that it was a good opportunity to go back to school and get my MBA. I ended up picking up my MPA because I made a specific decision to break from anything architecturally related at that time. I was heavily engaged in the AIA, and I just completely pulled back. And a year later, I very quickly realized that I love the profession too much to get too far away. So the MPA was added on because it's public administration. Yes, it's about working. A lot of people pursue the MPA to work in nonprofit organizations and government, but it's really the softer side of analyzing organizational structures. So I would say the MBA drives numbers and the MPA drives kind of the people decisions, right? It's quantifying those qualitative engagements.
Was it difficult to sort of do them at the same time and sort of have those two?
No, you'll actually find that a lot of MBA programs, it's a crossover, right? So it was an extra year to pick up my MPA. So there's a lot of crossover in curriculum between the two. I think most people either decide to pursue one or the other, right? But there's just like such a huge crossover in what we do as architects, engaging and touching the community, as well as from an MBA perspective, like needing to understand how to very specifically quantify the value of design that we bring to the table and be able to talk to executive, like CEOs and CFOs and COOs about what that means to them. Mm-hmm. So for me, that was the reason to pursue the combo. And then from there, and this is a very long story already.
That's okay. That's what this podcast is all about. So don't worry. Just keep telling us the story.
Yeah. So from there, I graduated kind of in the middle of our last great recession. And it was really about, it was not about finding the next, it was about finding the next thing, not about finding like the next thing that I was passionate about, right? Because I had accumulated a lot of student debt by that point. And I just needed to pay it back. And what I quickly discovered was, if you think about how hard it is to sell architectural services to people who don't understand what architects do, it's even harder to sell yourself as an architect trying to pursue a line of work in a different industry because they don't understand how our skills translate, which happens to be a blessing in disguise because I landed at a firm. They identify themselves as an innovative firm in built environment, very distinctly design thinking firm called MK Think. And I helped grow their strategy group. And it was a great place to be because I think when most architects think about strategy, right, they think about the big firms and what they're doing with architectural strategy. They think about the HOKs and the Genslers and the Perkins and Wills. And the truth about MK Think is it was what would be considered a small to medium sized firm, as small as 20 people. Maybe even smaller while I was there, but we'll stick to 20. The strategy group was its primary source of revenue and new client work. And I joke about it, but I joke with the partner about it, but we decided not to put AIA after my name as a designation on the card because the individuals that we were talking to and working with, they kind of have it set in their mind, what architects earn. And we were being compensated at a much higher rate than architects tend to get compensated at as strategic consultants. And some of what we do bridges into managerial consulting from an operations standpoint. So, it's usually later that they find out I have a background in architecture.
What specifically did MK Think do? Going in and sort of solving problems for organizations, or was it more designing spaces and environments, or all of it?
So it's all of it. So MK Think does have an architectural side, so we could implement that at any time in the process. But strategically, it was helping organizations manage their capital assets in a more meaningful way, and more specifically, taking all the data they had around their portfolio, their building portfolio, and making smarter decisions about the money they have or understanding how much money they need to raise to have a greater impact on their portfolio. We did a lot of work for a long time with Oakland Unified School District, helping them understand where to move students, where the administration buildings should be, what assets they actually need to get rid of, which you can actually, which, you know, probably highly, it's a very public thing to do, right? So it takes, it's helpful to have data to drive those decisions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you are, you know, looking at which schools need to be.
Yeah, there's a lot of emotion.
And where students need to be reshuffled. IDEO created this great lunch program for the San Francisco Unified School District. But one of my strategic, partners at MK Think, Alan Donnelly, helped them imagine how to implement that. So essentially, where does the central kitchen need to be located mm-hmm. for SFUSD based on not only delivery routes, but also the current kitchen equipment in all of the other schools. So how far would they have to park cook in the primary kitchen before they deliver to those other schools, and what could the schools do to needs to do at that point to actually deliver the meals? And then he went one further and looked at a lot of students receive their only meals of the day through their school.
Yeah.
Right. There's a lot of students and families in need. So what does it mean to SFUSD if they were to offer breakfast and lunch and not just lunch? So we did a strategic master plan for the Sonoma County Library System, where we analyzed the users coming in and helped them look at what type of programming they should be developing in each library. If you reposition the library as the heart of the community, based on the demographics in each kind of the neighborhoods that the libraries live. So what type of programming they should be developing, and, you know, in addition to that, how should they be utilizing their spaces? So in areas of Sonoma County where there's more retirees, you know, the space that you build for those individuals are going to be very different than the areas with a lot of influx of new younger families moving right. So obviously bigger children's areas versus kind of a dedicated to adult learning, center.
And sort of the reinvention of the library. You know, sort mm-hmm. of, or its overall purpose in the community, that it's not just a
right.
building for books. It's almost a community center.
Yeah. And a lot of what we do, kind of back to my original comment, is I have so much more engagement with the end users in the line of work that I was working on. You know, we bill out, you know, for a lot of hours just talking with individuals and, you know, hosting focus groups. Mm-hmm. So I did that for a couple of years, and I was looking for a change out of MK Think, and I really struggled trying to figure out what was next, because the great thing about MK Think is they provided this model where strategy was core to the revenue process. It was core to the firm. It was a strategic offering by the firm that was making the firm profitable. And I would go and talk to other firms, even some very large firms who I will not name, about how to reposition their strategy group as a core offering, or how to like make that its own individual revenue contributor within the firm. And nobody wanted to take it on to the extent that MK Think had done as a medium-sized firm. And by this time, the economy had kind of recovered, and I think architects were back in the mindset where, like, you know, I'm getting calls because I'm in that, all the time by recruiters, right? Because I fall in that very slim zone of a licensed architect, 10 to 15 years of experience.
Right.
I come from what has now been identified as a missing generation of architects. And so I was getting calls from recruiters all the time for jobs that I didn't want. I understood why they were calling me. And all the principals I was talking to at the time were just trying to hire for their pipeline. And that's all they could think about. So the idea of taking a risk is always very hard to talk to architects about. But also just starting something new was equally as hard. So I had a good friend of mine, Roy Abernathy, who I met through my AIA network and had worked with on and off through volunteer volunteer committees was looking for somebody to lead his West Coast, the West Coast team for a workplace. And I saw it as an opportunity to, you know, grow and develop my own team and to really continue to do the a similar type of strategic work that I've been doing now, but more, it's more with big tech companies, which, I think there's a lot of voice being given to the tech companies, both good and bad, because of the influence that they have on our daily lives, right? And just the money that they are able to throw at creating new things. So it's been really interesting to be immersed in their world and understanding how they operate and understanding what they need, what are their biggest fears, you know, attracting and retaining individuals to their companies. So from a workplace strategist, you know, kind of that's what we do. I joke that 20% of what we do is actually physical space related, you know, program development, not dissimilar from what architects do. But a lot of where we tend to differentiate ourselves, and I hope this is true of, it seems to be true that this is where we differentiate ourselves from other big corporations. So I work for Newmark Knight Frank, which is a very big commercial real estate brokerage in their consulting department, not dissimilar from JLL, CBRE, and CBRE. So usually if you haven't heard of Newmark, you've heard of JLL or CBRE.
Right. So very, very big real estate developer.
Yeah.
A lot of corporate office buildings and that kind of thing.
Yes. So from an organizational standpoint, we help our clients identify their space needs, but more specifically, our group looks at creating a better employee experience for our clients. So there's been this entire shift in the marketplace where the language, they don't call them HR anymore, right? It's gone from HR to employee excellence or employee experience, like head of EE or head of, you know, that shift came from the customer service world. So when there was more SaaS technology being delivered, so software as a service for yeah. architects out there, there was this whole shift from, I think, was your like customer service to how you build a better customer experience. And then there's all these tech companies who are like, you know, we're building we're paying really close to customer experience, but in order to keep and retain our employees, we need to focus on the employee experience. So whether or not there's like an actual shift in what that means, there's been a vocabulary shift to a better employee experience. So what my team does, and this is a very, very long again, what my team does is looking at space and program. But for instance, and they ask, you know, how do you differentiate yourselves from architecture? And I said, well, architects will go through a programming process and they will hear that your organization wants to be more collaborative and they will design collaborative spot like pods throughout your space, you know, or introduce more team rooms or project rooms to help facilitate that. But building out this spaces don't inherently make an organization more collaborative. So from an employee experience standpoint, we look at, you know, your delivery and understand what departments need to be collaborating when to relieve the bottlenecks. We help understand help organizations understand how to drive meetings so they're run in a more collaborative fashion, right? From like very task-driven top-down meetings to meetings where furniture is not fixed and you can push things aside because there's going to be a lot of whiteboard and brainstorming. And then we train managers to run more collaborative teams. So same thing with this whole notion of going to remote work, right? It's one thing to say we're going to provide employees a more flexible workday because everybody's doing it, but we essentially help organizations implement a successful remote working policy. So a lot of even big tech firms, their remote policy is very ad hoc, right? It's on person by person basis, which can actually get you into a lot of HR trouble. So we help them structure a remote working program. We drive the communications throughout the organization so that people actually feel comfortable utilizing the flex work program, but so also managers, and then we train managers on how to manage and collaborate with remote teams, right? So for all the managers that feel that if I don't see my people in their seats, that means they're not working.
Right.
They have to change their line of thinking. But at the same time, the employees have to feel that they have the permission to have that more flexible workday as well, too. So it's a very big culture shift. And I think it's interesting because architects focus, especially, well, architects, I think, are always wanting to get the post-occupancy survey, or they're also, and maybe that's actually not the trend that I want to go to. So, I mean, the interesting thing is architects, I feel, end up designing for the C-suite, right? And for the vision of where the companies want to go to. And then people get in there and they move into this amazing offices, right? And it makes office snapshots on Instagram and you know, all the workplace magazines and even contract magazines. And then from an operational standpoint, in terms of how they teams actually work, or how they were, you know, maybe they're changing to a more agile product delivery method, the space doesn't work for them because all of the other work to change the culture has gone into it. And then it falls back to the architect saying, why is this space designed this way? But it's kind of the missing link. Like there needs to be the evolution in culture so that people know how to work into these great work in these spaces that you actually designed correctly for them. They were just never taught how to use them correctly.
Right. So there's a whole level of design and thinking that has to happen before you get to the architecture. There's a people part of it, and the psychology part of it, and the flow and efficiency part of it, and how all these different things work, and the cultural shifts that we're seeing culturally, you know, in our society, things are shifting. And so all of that has to sort of be analyzed and figured out and designed before we ever get to the building. So the building can now be designed in a way that complements and supports those other things.
Right. And it's not to say like it can definitely not to dismantle a leader's vision, like, right. It can absolutely come top down if that's the culture of the company. But, you know, if the architects are designing purely for the leadership's vision, there still needs to be a culture shift that happens. You know, what is the gap, we say? So we measure current state, we measure desired future state, and we understand how large that gap is and what it's going to take them to get from A to B. And then we help them with the implementation plan to get from A to B from a culture standpoint.
We'll be right back to our conversation after this quick break to say thank you to our platform sponsors at Entree Architect, Gusto, RCAP, and FreshBooks. Payroll and benefits are hard, especially when you're a small business. You don't have time to be an expert in things like taxes and regulations. And old school payroll providers, they just don't get it. They aren't built for the way that we work today. Gusto is making payroll, benefits, and HR easy for small businesses. They're different. Modern technology does the heavy lifting, so it's easy for you to get things right. You no longer have to be a big company to get the great technology, those great benefits, and the great service for your team. To help support this show, the Entree Architect Podcast, Gusto is offering our listeners an exclusive limited-time deal. Sign up today, and you'll get 3 months free. Once you run your first payroll, just go to entrearchitect.com/gusto and claim your free 3 months of payroll processing today. entrearchitect.com/gusto. For years, when I needed information on manufacturers' products, I headed straight to Google. Then I sifted through the hundreds of results to find the one or two that might be the link to the product that I'm looking for. And more often than not, the link was not what I was seeking. It was outdated or didn't meet my requirements, so I went back to the search engine and started all over again. And this could take all afternoon to find the two or three products that I need. Does this sound familiar? I know you've done this. There is a better way. It's called ARCAT. ARCAT.com, ARCAT.com. Find what you're looking for in seconds. Building product information, BIM, CAD, and custom specifications using their exclusive tool, SpecWizard. So make ARCAT part of your efficient project workflow. Just type in entrearchitect.com/ARCAT in the internet browser and add that to your favorites. Just click that little favorites button, make ARCAT your favorites, and then visit ARCAT for every project. Make it part of your workflow. Find what you need fast and make more money on every project. EntreeArchitect.com/ARCAT. That's EntreeArchitect.com/ARCAT. FreshBooks makes it simple to send invoices, post your expenses automatically, track your time for your whole team, by project, and get organized with reports, communication, and notifications. Getting started with FreshBooks is ridiculously easy. Most people send their first invoice just seconds after starting their free trial. And the same goes for time tracking, managing expenses, collaborating with contractors, and viewing financial reports. It's fast and easy. And if you need help at any time, free award-winning customer service is just a phone call or an email away. And if you ever have second thoughts, don't worry. On top of our free trial here for Entree Architect listeners, you get a 30-day money-back guarantee, so you don't ever have to worry about choosing FreshBooks. So give FreshBooks a try. Try it free for 30 days. Just visit EntreeArchitect.com/FreshBooks and then let them know that we sent you by sharing Entree Architect in the How Did You Hear About Us section. That's EntreeArchitect.com/FreshBooks to access your free, unlimited 30-day trial. Gusto, ARCAT, and FreshBooks. Please visit our platform sponsors today and thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community.
How do you think, Evelyn, your training as an architect has sort of prepared you for the work that you're doing now?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a lot of what we do as architects when, well, first of all, I think what architects do better than anyone else out there is they're implementers, mm-hmm. right? So implementers in the sense that we build amazing one-off prototypes that stand the test of time, like in physical space, which is actually a lot, you know, management consulting groups typically leave plans behind and don't implement. So there is this sense of, I helped you build something and I'm going to help you deliver it, that architects bring to the table, and that under, like, in terms of that specific understanding. We are constantly bringing together all the necessary parties to solve a problem, right? And I think as this becomes even more true as buildings and the technologies that go into buildings are getting more complex, right? And the number of the people that you need to bring together even to do a home becomes more complex if you want to, you know, make it zero net energy, mm-hmm. and completely off the grid. So I think we are constantly bringing together a lot of consultants to work through a problem and get things done. And I do that every day, whether it's bringing together the leadership team and helping drive consensus, but kind of elevating people in their specialty to help drive to a common goal. I think I accredit that to my architectural learning. And then just kind of the whole three-dimensional problem solving and looking at problems from a variety of answers. I think it's interesting because the practice of architecture has remained relatively unchanged, we're very quick to pivot when we see a design flaw, right? And that I think is that like we can be, we're okay with that. We're comfortable with getting through a design and understanding where it needs to change through middle of the process to make the outcome better. And I think that sensibility also really helps kind of from a strategic standpoint. You know, I get thrown data, different data than we thought all the time, you know, and how, you know, architects, how do you make changes on the site? You know, you're doing a historical building and you have this unusual discovery, like what changes do you need to make in the design to make sure it still happens? So yeah. those type of applications very much kind of still directly affect what I do from a consulting standpoint.
Yeah. In terms of, you know, the practice of architecture, the wider vision of the profession that we have, you know, architects are very focused. Well, I think our society has a definition of what architects are and what they do. And I think architects traditionally have had an idea of what we do and how we do it. And I think that our culture is shifting. Our society is shifting the way we live, the way we work. When you look at all of those things, because of the technology that we have access to today, everything is changing. And yes. I think that the profession is going to have to change as well. And I know from experience, having been in this profession for a long time now and very involved in the practice of architecture and how architects work, that architects are typically slow to make those changes to address the way we practice architecture.
Right.
When I first started with the internet in the 90s, the late 90s, I built one of the first websites in my county for an architect. I know this because I went to the chapter meetings and said, "Hey, you need to have a website." And they'd be like, "What do I need a website for? I don't need a website." You know, and so I was on the cutting edge, quote unquote, you know, and I was probably 5 to 8 years behind everybody else who, you know, in the rest of the world. With architecture, with technology. And so I think architects get there, but they take a long time to get there. And that's not a criticism. It's just who we are as people and it's the type of people we are. But things are shifting and the practice of architecture is shifting. And I think the definition of architecture is broadening because of the opportunities that we have with technology and the way the way we think and the way that you just described and the skills that you have as an architect to bring to this other realm, I think we have a tremendous opportunity here as architects to execute on some of these things that are not necessarily part of that originally definition of architecture.
Yes. I'd love to see more architects do the type of strategy work that I'm doing even, right? So,
I think even this, the what we define as architects now is completely different than it was 100 years ago or 200 years ago or 500 years ago. We were still architects, but we were very different. And today we're very different. And we will evolve and in the future we'll be very different. And so as someone who sort of is exploring this, and I know this is an interest of yours and you're actually building some platforms to address some of these things, what is your thought in terms of the future of architecture and where we should go and how we should be thinking of some of these things?
Yeah. I mean, my biggest criticism of architects, just having served on the AIA and seeing, which is a volunteer leadership organization, right? So as with any volunteer leadership organization, leadership turns over on a very regular basis, right? Especially at the local component. So it's been interesting because even if people consider me on the younger side of things, although I wouldn't, I'm technically not a millennial as defined by the year groups. I've been around long enough to see architects kind of rehash the things that they hash. They were trying to work out about our profession 10 years ago. And I've been around enough to hear everyone talk about how what we do continues to be eroded, right? By the contractors, by real estate individuals, by developers. And especially after getting my MBA, and I was like, I kind of, you know, felt that it needs to be turned on its head, and it's like, and started asking, well, what are we going to do about it?
Exactly.
Right? We tend to complain about it a lot. Yeah.
That's true. That is happening. The profession is eroding, as right. it was traditionally defined. So right. are we just going to sit here and let it erode and let it be taken mm-hmm. away? And then we sit here with nothing, or are we going to look at the possibilities, look at the skills that we have, and broaden right. the definition of what we do?
Yeah. So I see this as a great opportunity, but I've also, you know, been known to say on numerous occasions and numerous different very public forums, that architects are three recessions away from being extinct if we continue down this path. And, you know, whether we truly are 3 years away from being extinct, I think it's a good starting point to have to begin that conversation of what needs to change. Right. So.
Yeah. So you've launched a site called practiceofarchitecture.com, mm-hmm. which
yes.
I'm amazed that you have that domain, because it's probably a domain that's very difficult to get. So I'm sure you got that a long time ago.
Yeah, I think I got it at least 10 years ago. Yeah. I was thinking ahead way back.
Yeah. So practiceofarchitecture.com. So what is practiceofarchitecture.com and how is it being used, or how do you want it to be used?
So it was, when it was first started, and it's actually recently gone through a revamp, but when it was first started, it was highlighting architects doing interesting things at the edge of practice, mm-hmm. right? So highlighting the ones that were really pushing the boundaries, right? And that was kind of established, you know, just as I was coming out of my MBA program and finding my own footing and getting inspiration from other individuals. And what I have discovered since then is, you know, you and I are not alone in our thinking. I think there is definitely a group out there that believes that the practice needs to evolve, but they don't necessarily know how.
Right.
Right. You know, I think we've kind of had this conversation before. You know, whenever I'm talking to a group of architects and you ask them a question about, you know, what advice would you give to someone looking to pursue a degree in architecture? It's the responses are all very singular, and it's all around what we would define as traditional practice, right? You know, that goes to, you know, not to say that students shouldn't be going to construction sites to understand how things go together, but I would like students to understand that that's not the only application of your architectural degree. You know, on the flip side, architects and even business, you know, very smart business people are, you know, looking at design thinking as a way of bringing innovation into organizations and companies. And I, you know, we do tend to tell people, and I've had people tell me, oh, you have an architecture degree and a business degree. The world must be opening up for you. You can do so many different things. But we never really talk about that value. And then what you can do with that architecture background. And it's about expanding beyond traditional practice. So the evolution of the practice of architecture is to continue to curate those individuals that are pushing the boundaries, but to use my experience now, having worked for nearly a decade after getting my MBA, to talk to architects about how you actually make that change and that evolution. So I've been working on a tagline for this, so don't hold me to it. But right now,
it's an exclusive. Yes, Entree Architect Podcast.
Like, I think I literally typed it up this morning because I was like, I have to get this down before I talk to Mark. The practice of architecture helps individuals and firms identify opportunities for leadership and growth in order to have careers and practices that continue to prosper in a changing world.
I like
so
it.
That's the working definition. So in addition to publishing my own articles on how, we're going to begin rolling out courses in three different verticals. And you'll find that it's very circular. So it's so for the individual leadership and professional development for architects. So this is for, I would say, the entire life cycle of an architect. It's for it's for architects who, you know, are like, gee, how can I go into consulting, right, and do something different? It's for students coming out of school that, you know, have learned really interesting things on, you know, data in the built environment, and they want to understand how can I take exactly what I've been doing in school and translate that in the real world.
Right. So basically taking your architecture degree and potentially your experience as an architect for somebody who's already been out of the architecture school, and leveraging that to do something either else or something that's within architecture, but beyond that traditional definition. I have an idea of something that I want to do, but I don't know how to do it.
Right.
That's somebody who would take that course.
Yeah. So how can you, so it's, you know, it's just broadening the conversation of how do I identify what I enjoy doing, identify what I'm really good at, identify where I want to grow. And, you know, is there somebody that can help me figure out, now that I know all these things, is my path in a small firm? Is it in a large firm? Is it going off on my own? Is it going in, you know, in-house to a Google to work on their real estate and facilities team? Mm-hmm. Is it doing more strategic work like Evelyn is doing? But helping them kind of look at those three things from somebody who has a shared background as an architect and figure out what's the next step that they want to take.
You should title it How to Work for Google. So what's the second vertical?
Okay. So the second vertical is what I'm calling, again, all working titles, developing knowledge, expertise, and storytelling. So it's
who's that for?
Go ahead.
Who's that for? Who would want to take that?
So developing knowledge, expertise, and storytelling, I would say they're really for individuals that have kind of figured out what their own voice is, and they want to position themselves as a knowledge expert, position themselves or their firms. Mm-hmm. And I think storytelling is really for business development directors, for marketing people, for the sole practitioner that is looking to compete against the bigger firms. But how do you tell meaningful stories that resonate with your clients and go beyond pretty pictures? Because what architects deliver is an entire service. And we don't often talk very well about the entire story of what it takes to really work with an architect and how that drives meaningful outcomes.
Yeah. Yeah. I think story is something that is something that could take the profession to a bigger place, but definitely right. Individual architects telling the story of what they do and how they do it and how it affects someone else is so important.
Yeah. And then the third vertical is actually helping most often small and medium firms, but working with large firms as well, to identify areas that they can innovate and actually change their business model mm-hmm. in their firm to create new lines of revenue to be prosperous, especially when the next downturn happens. And then that loops back to mm-hmm. kind of the leadership and individual development, because if you change what you're delivering and you change how you're delivering it, then what type of leadership training do you need your future leaders of your firm to be having?
Right.
To make that new successful, that new model successful.
Yeah. That's exciting. It's exciting for one, I love that you're dedicating a platform to this, because this is something that I've talked about for a long time, and I can't right. focus exclusively on that because we're sort of a broader
yes.
focus of business, but it's a passion of mine that there's more to architecture and there's more to architects than the traditional firm. And I love the traditional firm. I'm not saying that's dying or that should go away. I just think that there's a bigger opportunity for us. And,
right.
and you know, both in terms of practice, but also influence and
yeah,
financially,
absolutely.
There's a bigger opportunity for us that we're missing as architects. Mm-hmm. And I think that to have a place like the practice of practiceofarchitecture.com will be great, that we'll be able to sort of go there and contribute to the conversation that's happening there, learn from what you're presenting there, learn from other case studies and say, hey, look at what that person did. That's similar to what I want to do. How do I get there too? And so it'll be really exciting to watch that evolve and become a integral part of our profession.
Yeah. And I'm just sitting here thinking, so we're looking at launching our first course, which is going to be creating or recreating your career in architecture in the middle of March. And I'd love to work with you on, you know, a discount for your listeners.
Okay, so great. So yeah. And so when you're ready to launch that, let me know and we'll definitely share that with the community.
Yeah,
that would be great. So if are there other ways that the community can reach out to you and either, you know, participate or learn more about what you're doing, become part of the platform of what we're doing over at Practice of Architecture?
Oh, yeah. So there's a newsletter and there's unique content in the newsletter that's going out every week. So feel free to subscribe. There's a Contact Us, which is really Contact Me page on Practice of Architecture, which reaches out to me directly, or you can write Evelyn at practiceofarchitecture.com. You know, in addition to these courses, we are going, I hope to eventually move to actually consult with firms too, for individuals that are looking for more direct support in developing especially new innovative lines of business practice. And I think, and this is an aside, and it might be too big to talk about now, but two years ago, I chaired the Practice of Innovation Lab put on by the American Institute of Architects. And at A19, the national conference, we are hosting the Practice Innovation Lab 2, where we're going to give teams an opportunity to get in front of real VC individuals and kind of pitch new concepts to them.
That's at this conference coming up in June?
That's at this conference coming up in June. It's going to be an all-day event that's held during Saturday. You would just have to pick up, if you just want to attend that, you would just have to pick up a day pass for Saturday. But if you are already paying for the entire conference registration, then you just can drop in to some of the sessions we're having on Saturday.
Where can people find more information on that?
That is the national website. Okay. I hesitate to send them there now because I don't think the full description of the Practice Innovation Lab is up yet.
So definitely, if you're interested, go look for it. We just had Christian Jordan on talking about JAM, who was one of the winners.
They were the people's choice from the original Practice Innovation Lab.
And so we just talked to Christian about JAM and the progress that he's having with JAM. And so people are familiar with that. So if you're interested in sort of going to the next one or participating, just go to the national AIA site, AIA.org, and go look for information there.
Yeah, look for Practice of Innovation sessions happening on Saturday. We just sent them new descriptors, more in-depth kind of descriptors of what each of those sessions are going to be. But the first session is going to be a panel of VC people that are specifically looking at funding technologies within the built environment. The second panel is going to be individuals who have run companies and have been successfully funded by VCs. So people that have been on the receiving end of funding and what that's like. And then there will be a call for entry for teams that want to participate throughout the day. But the third presentation will be a Shark Tank-like opportunity for those teams to then pitch our first panelists of VC individuals. We're, of course, not promising any funds being given away, but I think it's just an opportunity for architects to get it in front of a different audience than they usually see at conference.
Well, that's exciting. I know where I'm going to be on Saturday because that sounds like something I'd be very interested in watching happen. So,
there'll be an application for teams too if you want to throw Entree Architects into the mix.
Maybe. I have a lot going on at conference,
yes, you
so
do.
I'm afraid to commit to more, but I definitely will show up and watch. This has been really, that's exciting to hear that that's happening again. So I hope there are some listeners who are interested in that and we participate in some of those things. And when you have more solid information about it, send it to me and I'll post it on the Facebook group. And
that sounds great.
People can find it there as well. And we'll post it on the show notes for this episode too. This is episode 262 for anybody who wants to go there. It should be there now. Because by the time this gets released, we'll have that information and it'll go on the show notes. Evelyn, before we wrap up, I want to ask you the one question that I ask everyone. What's one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
I'm going to go back to the whole storytelling thing that we just kind of covered at the end of the conversation. I think it's share meaningful stories, right? I think architects do need to be diligent about capturing their finished products with professionals, right? But it's just as important to tell about the story about how it got there, right? Because people, when they pay for your services, are not only paying for the end product, but they're paying for to build a relationship with you,
right?
So you need to tell them about what that relationship is going to look like.
Yeah.
So they know that, like, that's the person that I absolutely, they understand me the most, and they're going to get me, and we're going to be a good partner in this project.
Yeah. That's so important. HGTV is already telling your story. and it's not the story you want told.
No.
And so the only way that story is going to be rewritten is if we each individually tell that story of what architects are and what we do.
And right. And so, I think that could be as simple as modifying your about page, right, on your website, or the marketing material that you go out. Like, take one of your most favorite clients and kind of talk about what you know about your client. Don't talk about yourself. Talk about what you learned from your client going through that process, and why building that building for them was so meaningful because of what you learned about them.
Yeah. Great advice. So practiceofarchitecture.com if you want to learn more about practiceofarchitecture.com. And Evelyn Lee, if you want to learn more about Evelyn or sort of the rest of what she's doing, because she's doing a lot, evelynlee.com. It's evelynlee.com. And all over social media. You can just go to evelynlee.com and you can find all the social media links to all of that. Evelyn, this has been a really great conversation. I'm always inspired when I talk to you. I get motivated. And so thanks for coming by here.
Likewise. So thank you, Mark.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Really great.
We'll do it. We'll do it again soon. Thanks.
Sounds good. Thanks.
So that was episode 262 with Evelyn Lee. If you want to share that episode, the link is entrearchitect.com/episode262. I request that you do. Share that link with a friend. That's the way we grow around here. That's the way this podcast is getting out to the world. And I thank you for doing that. The link is entrearchitect.com/episode262. Go right now and download our newest free tool. It's free. The Entree Architect Billing Rate Calculator, and quickly calculate a billing rate that includes your pay rate, your overhead, and your profit. Stop guessing how much to charge and start earning what you're worth. Download the Entree Architect Billing Rate Calculator for free right now at entrearchitect.com/billingratecalculator. Download it for free, entrearchitect.com/billingratecalculator. If you are an entrepreneur architect who runs or owns your own small firm, then you are an Entree Architect. And I encourage you to go build a better business so you can be a better architect. Love, learn, share what you know. Thanks for listening and have a great week.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure. And when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay. We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark Arlepage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.